So first for today, let's talk about some of the other electrophilic aromatic substitution reactions that you need to know. So we covered nitration last time, and that was just to give a simple example of the way that a mechanism works for one of these electrophilic aromatic substitutions. The other reactions that we're going to see, they have different ways in which the electrophile is made, but they all react in the same way once you have the electrophile, where benzene opens up and attacks that electrophile, and then a hydrogen gets eliminated right afterwards in order to reform the benzene ring. So if nitration's what we did first, let's go to sulfonation next. Please, if you'd like to come up with a performance. I love music, you know. Boy, that'll make people turn their cell phones up if I make people come and sing the ringtones when I go off to class. I'll put that in the green sheet. Come on, man. And because you know it'll be in YouTube the very next moment, too. Now. I dropped my cell phone.
Oh, it fell. Thank you.
Okay. So, sulfonation. If we have sulfur trioxide and sulfuric acid, which is quite a potent combination. Sulfur trioxide has this formula. And really, it is just dehydrated sulfuric acid. So if you think about how reactive sulfuric acid is, and then we put energy into it to dehydrate it, you must imagine that sulfur trioxide is pretty hot stuff. In sulfuric acid, what happens is you protonate the compound to even further activate it. Once we protonate it, then it can open up. And now benzene can attack. I think I gave this heads up last time, but whenever benzene reacts, wherever the electrophile ends up attached to, there is already a hydrogen there, if we're starting with just plain benzene. And then, oh my gosh, I did it yet again. I so want to write benzene that I write those three bonds in automatically, but if I've just opened the benzene ring up, of course, one of those double bonds is missing. And the point of the reminder here is the positive charge goes on the position that the electrophile does not. So we're mostly done. Now, something floating around in solution, which, strange as it might seem, best candidate might be the bisulfate ion. That'll pull a hydrogen off, reform the benzene ring, and we get a sulfonic acid. Now notice this is just a methyl group short from being para-toluene sulfonic acid. So in fact, we're going to learn how to make tosic acid next lecture. Because at the end of today's lecture, we're going to get into a very classic, very systematic, but very important discussion of mechanism. How once you put a substituent on the benzene ring, how that substituent's going to influence if or where another substituent would go. But let's get through the other reactions first before we tackle that. So questions about sulfonation. Yes?
Should we put the box?
Oh, the brackets around the resonance structure? Yes, we should. Well, let's move on to Friedel-Crafts acylation. The product is a sulfonic acid.
Is
which is a term that we encountered last quarter when we first saw tosic acid. So Friedel Crafts acylation. There are two Friedel-Crafts reactions we're going to learn, very similar in nature. One's acylation, which means to put an acyl group on, and we'll find out in just a moment what an acyl group is. And then there's alkylation, which means to add an alkyl group to something. So in general, when you have an alkyl group attached to a carbonyl, that fragment of it is known as an acyl group. And so acylation means to put an R group with a carbonyl on some other molecule. If you have attached to the carbonyl on the other side a halogen, then this is known as an acyl halide. So, acylation involves the reaction of an acyl halide with a strong Lewis acid. And one of the most common ones used is aluminum trichloride. Can anybody rationalize why aluminum trichloride would make a good Lewis acid? Because what does it mean to be a Lewis acid? It accepts a lone pair. It wants to get electrons. So what makes something want to get electrons? Well, if it lacks electronegativity, if something else is pulling on it to create a positive charge. If you drew out the molecular structure, the Lewis structure for aluminum trichloride, what are you going to find out about aluminum? It doesn't have an octet. It's only got 6 electrons in it. And so that's similar to boron, except that since electronegative differences between aluminum and chlorine are not so stark, and also since aluminum is a larger atom, it's not as reactive as borane. So this is a solid that you can measure out in open atmosphere, with the understanding, though, that it is reactive. In open atmosphere, it would decompose to make hydrochloric acid. But safe enough that you can at least quickly measure it out. The way that the aluminum trichloride works is you could start with an acyl halide, which this particular compound has the common name acetyl chloride. Acetyl chloride with aluminum trichloride will make a complex where one of the lone pairs from the chlorine donates into that electron-starved aluminum. What can happen next is the chlorine can dissociate from the carbonyl, and that's only because of the strong Lewis acid nature of that aluminum. And that makes an intermediate known in general as an acylium ion. IUM is an ending very commonly added to mean positive charge. Acyl, that's that carbonyl with an R group. So acylium means a positively charged acyl group. Very, very, very strong electrophile, strong enough to cause benzene to break apart. So benzene will attack. This time I won't go on autopilot. I'll only draw 2 of those double bonds in. Show the carbocation. Chloride can disassociate from that complex at some point and therefore can act as our base to eliminate that hydrogen and end up with this compound. Questions about that mechanism? Then let's look at its close cousin, Friedel-Crafts alkylation, which means to use an alkyl group. Acylation is a fairly predictable reaction as far as what kind of structure you're going to end up with. Alkylation, you've got to be a little bit more careful what you use as a starting material. And to show what can happen, I'll use an example starting material that's going to have some sort of issue with it. So Friedel-Crafts alkylation starts with an alkyl halide instead of an acyl halide. The next couple of steps are very similar, though. The chlorine donates a pair of electrons into the aluminum. And then, at some point, that chloride dissociates. And there's got to be some evidence for that to be possible. Because this is not what ends up reacting. Because what did I just make? A primary carbocation, which if it really is its own unique isolated primary carbocation, that's not favorable. And you're going to have a carbocation rearrangement occur, hydride shift. Since a secondary carbocation is as good as we can do in this case, then that's what's going to now react with benzene. Then we eliminate to reform the benzene ring. So just, you can see this in the example I gave, but just to write this out, carbocation rearrangement. Is possible in Friedel-Crafts alkylation. It could be bad enough, in fact, that if you had a 18-carbon compound with a halogen somewhere in the middle, in theory, that carbocation can crawl up and down the chain and you can get a dozen products, let's say. Sometimes that might not actually be a bad thing, you know, depending on your application, but something that you need to be aware of. Any questions? Yes? Let me show you one more reaction and then I'll make it. So, any questions on this reaction? Or let's just go to the last one I've got, which is halogenation. Which works for chlorine or bromine. So very similar to the alkylation and acylation in that we're going to use a Lewis acid. If we want to add a chloride, we're going to use something that's got chloride as the counterion. If we're going to want bromide, we're going to use something with bromide as the counterion. So for example, if we had Br2, we could throw iron tribromide at it, and it'll form the same kind of complex. Forming, yet again, a strong electrophile. Notice that this effectively makes Br plus, which we know bromine wants to be negatively charged. It doesn't want to become positively charged. So if you make it positively charged, it seems reasonable that it's quite reactive. And then same closing steps. Benzene attacks. And then the benzene ring reforms. Questions? The public service announcement was about registration, because I know it's about to start for next quarter. And I want to clarify something I said, because you all have had exactly the wrong response to what I've said. What I said is that if enough of you did not make it out of Chem 12B, if not enough of you passed so that we could not fill up the sections next quarter, that there would then be a possibility of one of the sections being canceled. And I'd indicated it would most likely be Section 3. What you all heard is, get on the wait list for Section 1 because there's going to be no Section 3. Which is not what I said, but if that's what you do, that's what's going to happen. If you all decide, no, I'm going to get on the wait list for Section 1, then two things will happen. The Section 3 will get canceled and you won't get in the course. Because you'll get on the wait list, fine, but 26 of you all are going to register and get in the course. Unless all 26 of those people fail, go to Foothill, or decide they can't stand one more quarter with me, there's going to be 26 people, and the class is going to be full, and all of you on the wait list will have to go somewhere else. So there's no use for you all signing up for the wait list for Section 1, being panicked that you won't get into Section 3, because you're going to cause exactly what you don't want to have happen. So, if Section 3 is compatible with your schedule, you sign up for Section 3. If Section 3 is not compatible, then try to sign up for Section 1 or 2. Once Section 1 and 2 fill up, sign up for Section 3, because you've got no chances for Section 1 and 2. Unless the one or two random people that have their schedules change drop. Otherwise, a wait list is a wait list. Doesn't mean you're in the course. So you're just kind of silly if all of you collectively say, oh, let's get in the wait list for one. Now, Section 3 will not be canceled the day that it opens. So if you all do try to get into Section 1 and can't make it, you've got time to then move into Section 3. But I'm telling you, no reason to stay on that wait list for Section 1, because how many people dropped so that ads could happen this quarter? Did I actually add anybody? Maybe one person out of all three sections. So do you want to take that risk? Do you want to have to go to Foothill or somewhere else to take it? So don't everybody just pile on the wait list. Don't be silly about this.
But is people that we have for all three sections now enough for the next quarter section?
Yes. If everybody from this quarter moved on, we're not full, but we're full enough they wouldn't cancel the sections. 20, if you're below 20, the section gets canceled. And we have 24 in all three sections, I think, right now. And there's people coming from the outside. There's people that didn't get to take 12C last year that, for their transfer requirement, they have to take it at the same institution, so they're coming back to take it. So it is true if it doesn't fill, it'll get canceled. I never said anywhere it's going to be canceled. I just told you how it would get canceled. Don't make it come true, though. And that's all up to you. I can't control registration. If you all decide to go on the wait list, that's your choice. But then when a class gets canceled, don't complain to me. All right? You understand the situation? Now back to chemistry. Any questions, any of these reactions before I go on to our main next topic? Why do I look at this thing? It just makes me upset. What's that? I am. I still haven't gotten my silly box back again yet, though. So, no, the lecture is being recorded. Not to worry. Now, here is our next big topic. What is the name of this molecule I just wrote?
You're not showing us.
Oh, come on, read my mind. What is the name of the... Phenol, there you go. Okay, good. Oh, man. This, when you react it with nitric acid and sulfuric acid, will have what added to it? A nitro group. That's right. Those are the conditions for nitration. It turns out that the vast majority of the mixture that's produced is a combination of ortho-nitrophenol and para-nitrophenol. Turns out there's hardly any, it's non-zero, but hardly any of the meta forms. So almost exclusively ortho and para substitution occurs. And it turns out the reaction, compared to just plain benzene, is fast. Fine. What if we had something like nitrobenzene that we reacted under the same conditions? It turns out only one major product forms. The meta product. And this reaction is quite slow. It requires lots of heat. So what's going on? Why is it that one substituent causes mainly just ortho and para substitution to occur, and it also causes the reaction to speed up, whereas another substituent slows the reaction down and guides the next one to substitute at the meta position instead? How many of you have read the chapters on benzene? Wow. Well, that's true. Honesty helps. But I one of these centuries, I'm going to figure out, other than giving quizzes every day, how I keep you all studying on track. Boy, because you all know I'm going on sabbatical next year, right? So I got a whole year to think of what new way, what new cruelty to cause for the next class, when I've had a whole year away and to get refreshed and all these new ideas, boy, they're going to hate me.
What is that?
Sabbatical?
Yeah.
Comes from the word Sabbath, which is the day of rest. So every seventh day, except sabbatical means every seventh year. So from September to June, I will not be here. I'm just not here. That's right. I'm going to work on a textbook again.
Really?
Yes.
Cool. Maybe we get this.
Do you get if it actually gets published? Then yes. My intention is for De Anza students to pay almost nothing or very little, so that there's no perception of conflict of interest.
You still be rich though.
Well, if I can get it peddled around to other places, yeah. Got to do something. Got to have some goal in life. I mean, once y'all get through college, what's the next hurdle?
True.
So that's my next hurdle. I, of course, I would be trying to do something that's electronic, because that's where the future is, right? I could have 3D holograms and laser projections, and wow. It only costs $10,000 for your textbook. But man, the thing's got sweet bass coming out of it. So, back to the chemistry problem involved. Let's see what happens when we take phenol and we substitute it with any general electrophile. So the other section, their notes, I had a specific reaction, but I'm worried that while they were studying this, they might think, wait, there's too many nitros floating around. Because I had nitro as the substituent, and I was doing a nitration. So even though I had this example of what would happen if we nitrate, it doesn't matter the reaction we do. Whatever is already on the benzene ring is what's going to determine the result. So, let's say I have some electrophile E that I allow to react with this. And let's say that I first allow it to react through the ortho position. So remember the reminder that I had earlier that wherever the electrophile adds, that's where there already is a hydrogen. And then wherever it doesn't add, that's where the positive charge ends up. Instead of completing the reaction, let's notice that that positive charge can be delocalized, can be scooted on over to the oxygen. Which, yeah, it's not favorable for positive charge to be on oxygen, but hey, it's delocalized, and delocalization is a favorable thing. Well, let's see what would happen if we did it at the meta position instead. Now, yes, I'm writing it through a particular carbon, which I know I don't normally do that as a mechanism style, although it is allowable. Now, what do we get in this case? Well, let's see. So the electrophile I want at the meta position, that's going to put the carbocation at the para position. I still got one double bond over here. Let's make a resonance structure, move the positive charge around and see what I get. So I move the positive charge once. I'll move it again. But no matter how I move it, do I ever get it to where the positive charge itself is right next to the OH group? No. So there's delocalization. In fact, let me go back up here. When I say delocalization, I should point out that it's the delocalization with oxygen. Another way to put it is that oxygen's putting electron density into the benzene ring. One way that we're going to talk about this reaction when we come back on Wednesday is to point out that the formation of the arenium ion, which I'll write that down on Wednesday when we do it, the positively charged benzene, that's unfavorable because you break aromaticity. If you notice, once we add the electrophile, that electrophile is at an sp3 hybridized position. So it's breaking the stabilization, which last time we talked about how we could observe that stabilization by hydrogenating different compounds. We did the whole discussion of one double bond, two double bonds, three triple bonds, or three double bonds, and the energy differences between those possibilities. Yes? No? Cyclohexene we did, and it was -120, and cyclohexadiene, and it should have been -240, but it was -232 instead, and then benzene should have been -360, but it was -208 instead. So if that first step of making the positive charge is so rough, but if you put some electron density into the benzene ring to help it attack the electrophile, then shouldn't that make the reaction easier? And the answer ends up being yes. So by the oxygen getting involved, that's favorable. Here, the second one, no matter what we had as a substituent, any form of benzene ring that we add an electrophile to is initially going to have a positive charge that can go back and forth across most of the ring. But there's no extra stabilization really going on here. So it's not unfavorable, but it's not favorable. There's no delocalization with the oxygen. Now, what would happen if we now looked at the para case? Well, you might predict from the observation that I started with, the fact that phenol only produces the ortho and para, I bet you we're going to find out that the para is favorable. But let's demonstrate that.
Dr.
Yes. I'm saying that the meta position, if you substitute there, it generates a carbocation that is not able to receive, through resonance, the electron density from oxygen. That electron density from oxygen helps stabilize the positive charge. Anything that helps stabilize the positive charge makes it easier to form. Because what I just said is that the first step of this reaction is rough. So if here's my reactant and here's my intermediate, the carbocation, if I can stabilize the carbocation by letting other electrons interact with it, that makes my energy gap smaller, which lowers my activation energy, which makes the reaction faster.
But then the end product itself, does that have aromaticity?
The end product, of course, it's aromatic. This is not the end of the reaction. So everyone that's kind of in their own little writing world right now, look up for a minute and listen to this. This is not the full reaction mechanism. At the end of each of these, a hydrogen has to be eliminated and benzene has to reform. What I'm showing you is that these different intermediates, because you start from the same reactant but go three different directions. And you know, we already had kinetics versus thermodynamics where we were talking about competition between reactions. So if you have these three possibilities that we're working on, the ortho, the meta, and the para, what I'm showing you is that ortho and para are favorable, meta's not. Meta's not unfavorable, but it's not favorable. Since ortho and para are actively favorable, they're the ones that form. And that's why this type of molecule, phenol, is known as an ortho-para director. Let me finish out the mechanism and I'll summarize this behavior. So now I'm going to have reaction through the para position. And I'm going to delocalize that carbocation. Notice that just moving it over one, I've already got the carbocation drawn in such a way it's again right next to the lone pair of oxygen. So that means it can delocalize with the oxygen, which ends up being favorable. So, because the positive charge can be delocalized with oxygen in the ortho and para cases, phenol and other similar molecules are known as ortho-para directors. Now, there's other molecules like, yes.
Why the positive charge, like skipping one carbon and skipping one carbon?
Why is it skipping one carbon? What does the allyl system look like? That skips one carbon too, doesn't it? Can you think of a way for us to get the positive charge into the middle carbon in a molecule like this? Same thing with the benzene ring. That's why the positive charge skips a position each time it moves around the ring. Now, there's some other molecules that are orthopara-directors. We already got phenol. This is a molecule I don't think we got on our list of names last week, did we? With an amino group. Extraordinarily common molecule, though, so you should know it. Aniline. And we did pyrrole as an example of a molecule that's aromatic, which is not related to this, but just in terms of naming. Well, you've seen this compound before. It's furan. But one I don't think I gave you before is if you have sulfur there instead, which is the molecule thiophene. So aniline, extraordinarily active orthopara director. We have phenol. If we had an ether attached to that position, if we put OCH3, what's the common name for that molecule? Anisole also has a lone pair that could delocalize, so also would be an orthopara director. Anytime the electrons can delocalize off the substituent, then they're orthopara directors. And we'll do more with that next time, but I have just enough time left for me to show you the other case, which is the meta director. Yes? I made him forget his question now.
Okay. For the aromaticity?
Yes.
The lone pair on O and S,
one of the lone pairs would be perpendicular to the ring. One of the lone pairs would be just like pyrrole and would delocalize. Anytime you can take a lone pair off the substituent and delocalize it onto benzene, in other words, when you add electrons to benzene, that makes it go to the orthopara position.
Can't you do that with nitrogen?
You can in aniline's case, but what if we had a nitro group? Let's look at the other case now. And to do this, but to not make this too tough to read, let's remind ourselves that if we had something like nitrobenzene and we wanted to write the Lewis dot structure out, here's what it would look like. Remember that I caught some of you all last time in the way that you were writing nitro. I want to remind you all that nitrogen can't have five bonds to it. So formally, when we write the structure, there is a positive charge on that nitrogen. In reality, this is the delocalized ion, but still, the nitrogen is delta positive, at the very least. So keeping that in mind, let's look what would happen if we took nitrobenzene and tried to do electrophilic aromatic substitution. And I'll again start with the ortho position.
Oop, no, sorry, fail. There we go.
So, hidden, remember, in the structure is the fact that there's a plus charge on the nitrogen. I just made a carbocation that has a plus charge right next to the nitrogen. Do you think it's favorable for those two plus charges to be right next to each other? Uh-uh. Yes, in Yun's alternate universe, they're perfectly fine. So no, it's quite unfavorable for two positive centers to be right next door to each other. Well, what about the meta case then? Well, I can move the charge around the ring once. Which will get that positive charge closer to the nitro group. Then I can move it around again. Which keeps it just as close to the nitro group. But notice that we never end up with the positive charge at the position where the nitro group is. So this turns out not to be favorable compared to benzene. Because, again, the first step of this nitration or any electrophilic aromatic substitution reaction, first step is to make the carbocation. Having electron density thrown at the benzene ring provides the electron density to help start the reaction. So that's why phenol's more reactive. Here we have a nitro group that is pulling electrons off the benzene ring. The same benzene ring we're trying to have take those electrons and attack something else. So if you're pulling electron density off the benzene ring, that means it doesn't want to attack something else. But at least this is not as bad as the thing I drew up above. At least I don't end up with two positive charges right next to each other. So comparatively, this is the okay case. So, what would the para case look like? Turns out it's going to be just like the ortho. Which, as I'm writing these structures out, this is kind of related to a theme that I didn't carry through much this quarter. One year I got really into this theme of opposites of reactions, that if one reaction does one thing in the cationic form, that it's going to do another in the anionic form. Notice that the whole previous page, we were looking at a substituent that was adding electron density to the benzene ring. That made orthopara better. Notice that we're writing all the same structures, but now the opposite is true. We want to avoid the substituent. So now the orthoparas are worse. So changing the type of substituent made exactly the opposite behavior. Let me finish writing this resonance structure out. And actually, we don't have to go very far. I moved the charge just once. And we see I end up again in a case where I have Gesundheit. Positive charge
right next to the nitro group. So, how did I write that the first time?
On a crush group, there's going to be NO2.
Yes. So, because the intermediate formed by adding to the ortho and parapositions causes an unfavorable charge interaction. Substitution. Occurs at the meta position instead. And so we call molecules that have this kind of behavior meta directors.
So when you're reading over this topic, what you should do for your own selves, before I write it down and just give you the answer, try to take a handful of the common compounds that you see in that chapter and identify which ones are orthoparadirectors and which ones are metadirectors. We're not quite done with this topic because it turns out that I've kind of conflated two issues here in this initial presentation. The fact that we have orthopara versus metasubstitution. But there's also the fact that I said that in the phenol case, the orthopara case, it sped up the reaction. In the meta case, it slowed it down. Those are not always true. Well, actually, the meta case is... the meta case I don't think has an exception. I think any time that you have something that causes meta, it also causes a slower reaction. But we will discuss how halogens end up causing orthopara substitution, but also end up slowing the reaction down. And I'll give you a little introduction to that so that it'll help you when you go off and read this. Because think about this. Is oxygen electronegative?
Yes.
Then how is it that I'm saying oxygen, even though it's an electronegative element, is adding electron density to the benzene ring? Because we're talking about what oxygen's doing. Well, oxygen does pull electrons away, but because it has a lone pair that can delocalize, it ends up adding more electron density by delocalization than what it steals by induction. When you have a halogen, the opposite is true, that its inductive effects end up being stronger than the resonance effects. And it's partially due to the size of the atoms involved. Chlorine, bromine, iodine, they don't overlap as well with carbon, so delocalization doesn't provide as much electron density. Fluorine's on the same row as as carbon on the periodic table, so the overlap's good, but fluorine's the most electronegative element. So even if you had resonance, fluorine still steals it back away by induction. And that's the detail part that we have to cover on Wednesday. Yes? Quiz doesn't include any of today's lecture. All molecular orbital diagrams we've done since and even before exam 2. So including the allyl system, the butadiene system, and then benzene. Those MO diagrams you need to know, yes. The questions being asked is only the MO diagrams that you've done in class, the ones that you're responsible for. 99% likelihood, yes. So I'm more concerned, do you get the examples we've talked about, than creating some new ones?